Okay. So regarding the donuts, I thought since I was the guy who enjoyed Santorini and you are the one who had to come, you know, to the makeup classes, you know, at some point of time I have to do something. Plus, of course, you know, it's Gandhi's birthday today and we knew that he always liked Krispy Kreme donuts. You can ask anybody from India, they'll tell you that. Right? Right, guys?
Do we get extra credit?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Okay. So, what we are going to do is basically talk about efficient algorithms for MDPs, which we started talking about last time, and I'm specifically going to spend some time with two different algorithms, RTDP and labeled RTDP, which is like one algorithm that I sent you a paper on right after the last class. And the other one is, after a long time, finally talk about FFHOP. Okay? And if I actually have time, I might say a few things about, I mean, either I'll, you know, talk about MECLUG as part of this discussion itself, or, you know, I might show some slides at the end. Either way, come next week, we will be doing reinforcement learning, which is very hard to tell where MDPs end, where reinforcement learning begins. In fact, today we will talk a few things. You know, as I said, last class too, you tend to think of reinforcement learning in the model. Normally, you tend to do that in the framework of MDPs. And so the basic idea is, if you know the model, then it's just an inference algorithm. And if you don't know the model, then you need to learn the model. But the only way you can learn the model is by executing the partial model you have. This is why reinforcement learning is interesting. So the idea is, if children said, I wouldn't do anything in the world until I completely figure out what's going on, you know, then they won't move anywhere. Okay? So they have a partial model of the world and they have to execute with respect to it. And then they learn more of the world. So this is why reinforcement learning is this very nice framework where you wind up thinking of planning or inference, which is exploiting what you know, at the same time learning new stuff. If you learn new stuff, you learn the model, and then you exploit what you know, then you are just doing value and policy iteration. And reinforcement learning combines both of them. And in fact, the line is so thin within the MDP framework between RL and MDP and pure inference that many algorithms, like for example the RTDP that we are talking about today, was originally a reinforcement learning algorithm. Okay, and we will talk actually what part needs to be changed such that we can say reinforcement learning algorithm as against a pure inference algorithm. Okay, but it'll be fun to actually learn reinforcement learning on itself, and that's what we'll do next class. And I sent you the chapter from Russell's third edition, chapter 21. It'll be fun to read. Okay, yes. Yeah.
That's the difference.
Basically the idea is you're always stuck with this. It's exploration versus exploitation. Okay? At any point of time, right after your middle school or elementary school, you could have said, yeah, I learned enough. Let me exploit what I know. And then that would be exploitation. So that's basically, with respect to your knowledge, what's the best way to act in the world such that, you know, you will increase, you know, you'll maximize your reward. You know, if it's money, then, you know, maximize the money you get. Or you can say, no, not yet, let me get some more knowledge. And then wait until then and then exploit, okay? Or you can say, while I'm getting more knowledge, I'll also exploit what I have. And that's also possible. So in general, exploitation is inference. Exploration is learning. And you have to combine both in general.
So unsupervised learning, some examples seem pretty similar to this, where you sometimes bootstrap from the small set of data and learn new data.
Yeah, so the classifier-based learning, where basically people talk about supervised, unsupervised learning, this is reinforcement learning, where essentially the assumption is that after some number of actual executions in the world, a state will give you some reward that you will feel, you the agent will feel. Notice that children would not learn. This is actually a very interesting mind-bending thing. You know, you can bring children into this world without them knowing what actions do. What actions do. If children come into this world without knowing what feeling happy is, I argue that they won't learn anything. Do you understand what I'm saying? If you don't come into this world with some reward circuitry in your head, okay, such that there is pain and there is pleasure. I mean, it's not going to be, of course, later on, you know, your parents try to brainwash you into thinking that, you know, the stuff that you're doing, you know, for years and years studying for exams, that's supposed to be pleasure. Just try to think of it as pleasure. But, you know, when you are just coming to this world, you don't have parents trying to brainwash you. Even if they do, you can't understand what the heck they're saying, right? So you need to have, at the bottom of it, pleasure and pain signals that are inbuilt. And this, we have to thank the evolution for it. Imagine if, you know, evolution started giving you pleasure signals whenever you put your hand on a red hot stove. Then all kids will have, you know, burnt hands. Do you understand what I'm saying? So that's actually a mind-bending thing. You know, certain amount of reward signals have to be built in. And then you will try to, much of what you do in when you say there's something is an acquired taste, for example, coffee is an acquired taste, beer I'm sure is an acquired taste, right? You know, it is because you will try to, essentially what you're saying is you're trying to suppress the immediate reward, which is ugly, and try to convince yourself, you know, higher level brain is trying to convince you that, you know, somehow survive this and then there is some good stuff that happens later on. Okay, that's acquired taste. That's what we mean by that. But ultimately, acquired taste has to go into the pleasure and pain signals that the brain has. Now, of course, we also know that because the brain came into this world, we evolved into this world with, you know, specific pleasure and pain signals, if we screw around and actually, you know, directly go for, you know, go to those, you know, circuits and, you know, make yourself feel very happy or very unhappy, you know, which is basically, you know, very unhappy is clinical depression and very happy is LSD, right? I'm not telling you what it is, you know, I'm not supposed to tell you. But the point is that there, in essence, you said there is no actual translation from the working in the world and the pleasure signal. And since you have been already brought into this world to be happy when that pleasure signal strikes, then if you just take a certain amount of stuff that gives you pleasure directly, then who the heck cares about the rest of the world? So that's the sad part. But anyway, so there is one thing that you need when you come into this world, which is pleasure and pain signals built in.
So that's the tangible.
And in reinforcement learning, what happens is after you do some number of actions, you get reinforcements, pleasure and pain signals. Based on that, you're trying to decide what actions are good, what actions are bad. That's what reinforcement learning does. Okay? And, you know, unlike the normal classification learning where you're just saying, you know, this is positive example, this is negative example, reinforcement learning is directly related to interleaving of reasoning, I mean, interleaving of doing and learning. Inference and exploration, both are required in reinforcement learning. It's a multi-step thing. Okay, that's about RL, but we are going to get into that anyway. So today we will talk about RTDP. So in basically, remember that we have value and policy iteration algorithms, right? We talked about that. Those are the ones that will always work. And there are multiple ways of improving value and policy iteration algorithms in various ways. We already talked about some of them. For example, value iteration doesn't have to be synchronous. It can be asynchronous. Now, in fact, RTDP is a way of doing asynchronous value iteration. What is it doing? What it is doing is it's starting, like I'll come back to this slide in a minute. So suppose I'm at a state S0, okay, and then I'm trying to figure out, you know, we'll assume that we are trying to figure out the value function. If I find out the value function, then I can find out the optimal policy. If I get the optimal value, I can get the optimal policy. And you know, it's also the case that you know RTDP, the paper actually was written in the context of stochastic shortest path MDPs, which means instead of value function, you learn the cost function. Okay, and instead of maximizing the value function, you're looking optimal value is not the maximal one. I mean, in the case of value, its optimal value will be the maximal one. In the case of cost, optimal cost function will be the minimal one. Okay, and in fact, thinking in terms of SSSP, the stochastic shortest path algorithm is actually good for us because that's how we thought of heuristics in A-star search. And in fact, we will see that RTDP uses heuristics very directly. Okay. It can use heuristics as to initialize the value the cost function. So an admissible heuristic, for admissible heuristic would be a lower bound on the cost function. Okay. And furthermore, in fact, if you read that paper, and you can also convince yourself that if I initialize the MDP with the admissible heuristic, then if I do value iterations, not only does the cost converge to the optimal cost, it does so sort of monotonically. It keeps increasing. It will never reduce. This is important. This is actually important. In fact, how many of you think that the fact that cost function increases is important for RTDP and in particular LRTDP?
It's important.
What?
It's important because you would hit a local minimum.
Yeah, so I don't know how many of you read the paper I sent. It's okay if you didn't read, but yeah, if you did read it, you'll notice that the entire labeling algorithm depends on the fact that value function can only monotonically increase. Okay? Basically, what happens is if you have one good neighbor who is already solved and who have a bunch of unsolved neighbors, but their values are already worse than the good guy, you know that they can never become better than the good guy. So you may as well take what you get from the good guy and say, I am also solved. This is only going to happen if value functions monotonically increase. In normal value iteration, that's not required. In fact, I told you that value iteration can be started by arbitrarily initializing a value function. And it doesn't have to have any connection to admissibility. And then if you do Bellman updates enough number of times, you're guaranteed to get to the optimal value function. Now, monotonicity is actually very important only in the middle. You know, monotonicity here is sort of like the pathmax heuristic and monotonicity in A-star search. And it's only important in the intermediate places. And in this particular case, solving, saying somebody is solved is like an intermediate decision. You know, goal is already solved. And as more and more things get solved, then you actually act as if they are also pseudo terminal nodes. So if you hit a solved node, you don't need to go forward. Again, this is assuming that you read the paper, but I'll again say what I'm saying with respect to this picture here. So I'm stuck in S0. I have a bunch of actions that I can do from S0. Okay? Now, the question, of course, is which action should I do? Okay? So what RTDP does is basically RTDP does something called trial. What it does is starts from a state. You know, we'll assume that at any point of time there is a cost function. That's not the optimal cost function, but it's an admissible cost function. Okay, it could be zero, in which case it's admissible always, right? And then what you do is when you start from the state, then you look around, you use the Bellman update to figure out which is your best action to do. Remember, in deterministic scenarios, best neighbor and best action are connected because an action takes you to a single neighbor. In stochastic scenarios, a single action can take you to five different states with five different probabilities. So that action's value is the probability of it taking you to S1 times the current value of S1 plus probability that it takes to S2 times current value of S2, etc. That, if you sum that up, plus you take the cost of the action itself, that will give you the Q value of the action. That's basically, if you were to take that action, this is the best you can get as the value for this step. Okay? Right? So you would compute the Q values for all of these guys based on the current value function. Okay, and then whichever has the lowest Q value, because we are doing cost minimization, that guy is chosen. Okay, and then that guy's Q value then becomes the value of the S0. Notice what I just did. This is exactly what S0 would have done if it was taking part in value iteration. It just looks around its neighbors and resets its value based on the neighbor's values using the Bellman update. What RTDP is really doing is, you know, value iteration didn't tell you what order to do the updates. RTDP is putting a specific order on them.
Is putting
a specific order on them because I'm basically saying I will do a particular trial and in that trial I will update. Okay? So in this particular case, it just updates the S0's value. So S0 is a little more consistent with its neighbors right now. Okay? And then now it picks that action. And it, at this particular time, it can, this is the place where RTDP differs based on whether you're doing reinforcement learning or whether you're using RTDP to just compute the, you know, value function for a known MDP. Okay, here we are going to discuss doing it for, I mean, if you're doing it actually as reinforcement learning, then you do this action in the real world. And one of these outcomes will actually happen to you. Okay, that's how RTDP works in the reinforcement learning. But what for us, what we do is we know the probabilities for these three guys because we know the model, right? And so you toss a coin and decide which probability, which particular outcome actually occurs. Okay, so I tossed a coin and my tossing coin said this is the outcome that occurs this time. Remember, it's important to toss the coin. You know, as you know, you can't just pick the most likely outcome. That means it's not probabilistic at all. That means you actually are deterministic. Right? The tossing is important. If this is 0.001, if you toss the coin, it's highly unlikely that you will get this outcome. But it's not zero likely. Okay? So you actually toss the coin and then you get one of the outcomes, let's say this one. Now I'm in this stage. Okay, I do the same thing that I did in this state. So I will look at this state, look at all the actions, pick the best action based on the current value function, right? Based on the current value function, and then reset its Q value based on that. So it doesn't matter what its value was originally. It really matters. So when this particular state was being, if you remember, in computing these guys' Q values, you use these guys' value functions, these guys' values. But then now that you came to this point, you don't really care what it says is its value. You actually recompute its value based on the values of its neighbors using the Bellman update. You understand? And then you update its value. So this is exactly what you're doing. You're doing value iteration for individual states that occur on a trajectory that you are simulating yourself. Okay? That you're simulating yourself. And so you do this and, you know, you keep doing it until you either, you know, there are multiple ways of stopping, but in stochastic shortest path, the most reasonable thing to do is you stop when you hit a goal, a terminal node. Then there is no point in going forward anymore. Now, when you hit a node, what do? You actually, you know, especially if it's a stochastic shortest path algorithm, there is actually an initial state, remember? So you start all over again from the initial state and do one more trial. Between trials, the only thing that remains is what? The value function. Okay, yes, sir. What? When I come second time around, right?
Second time around.
Yeah, you have to recompute again.
What would be different?
Exactly. Tell me why. Why would it be different? Because this is, it's a very good question, by the way. It's actually a very good question. The reason is, first time around when I thought A2 is the best, it was based on the current values of these guys. But now at least this guy's value has changed based on one step look ahead. And so, because of which, a particular action's expected value can change completely. So think about this way, okay? you were saying this guy is good because, you know, there is a 0.1 probability that you will go there, 0.8 that you will come here, and 0.1 that you will come here. And your current value function said this guy's cost is just like 0 or maybe 0.1. Okay? It looked, because of that, since most of the probability is going into this, it looks as if this action expected cost is low. So you wind up picking this action. But when you did this one step look ahead from here and you updated this guy's value, you might find that that is actually, it turns out that, you know, this state, from this state there is no actual way to go to the goal state. It's a very long way to go to the goal state. And that message slowly came up to here, and then that gets reflected in your value, cost now. That gets reflected in your cost now. Yes, it's exactly what happens in value, you know. In fact, I wish I had the picture here, but if you look at the way values, you know, there is a picture that I showed in 471, and it's also available in the textbook, which basically says that, so suppose I have like a grid like this, right? And then there is a plus one here, and then a minus one here, and everything has been set to 0 or minus 0.4. Well, you know, reward, okay? And then you're trying to compute the value iteration values. Then if you plot the values of the individual states with respect to number of iterations, so iteration number and the value. Now consider this state. This is state, let's say, S15. S15's value will always be plus 1. It was plus 1 to begin with, and it will remain plus 1 all the time. Similarly, S17's value will always be minus 1. What happens to this guy? In the beginning, this guy's value starts from a minus 0.4, right? And then after just one iteration, it finds that I'm a loser, and I'm surrounded by losers. So I should be even more unhappy. Do you understand what I'm saying? Because everybody else is thinking their value is their current reward function. So its value actually starts from 0.04 and falls down for a while, for the first few iterations. As this is happening, at the same time, this guy starts realizing, hey, I'm not a loser. I'm next to the rich guy who is plus one. So if I play my cards right, I can get a pretty good value. Right? Now that message will come in the second iteration up to here. So what happens to the value function is it will fall down and then converge. This is what happens in the normal values. And when it converges, you know, when it reaches its correct value, that's what is called convergence for the state. That's what is LRTDP paper talking about. Now it depends on whether or not you converge fast. Depends on whether you are focused in doing the value iteration. In this particular picture, you know that the right way to do the value iteration is ignore the synchronous iterations, just do it backward, one step at a time. That's because you can see the direct thing in front of you. Okay, what RTDP is doing is it's just starting from some state. It has, in the beginning, all it has is a admissible heuristic. The admissible heuristic may have told it approximately which are better states, which are worse states, which kind of looks beyond the immediate reward. And so admissible heuristic will make sure that the trial that you are trying is one of the trials that is actually likely to happen if you were to, you know, simulate this MDP. And it's the more likely one for which you want the real values, because those are the ones you should know. You want to know what's the right thing to do in the states that are actually likely to happen. Right? That's basically what RTDP is doing. And so now, in fact, so this is a question I have here. So note that the value function in the way I showed you, and in fact in the paper too, is being updated per each level. That means as soon as you figure out what's your best action here, you decided to then take its Q value and put this as the value function. That's the way it's being done. So you update your value, do simulation. Update your value, do simulation. Okay, now there is an alternate way. I mean, there are many other alternate ways of doing it. One other alternate way, in fact, for the longest time I assumed that's what that algorithm is doing, is since anyway I'm going all the way to the end, let me hit, this is only in my mind anyway, right? Let me hit the final state, then I know this guy's value is for sure. I know exactly what its value is. Then update backwards. Now remember, when I update backwards, when I'm updating this guy's value, it's not just going to depend on only on this. It basically has a bunch of actions that will take it to both these this state and other states, and they have values. Based on the correct values for this guy and possibly incorrect values for the other guys, you figure out what is this guy's value. And then you backtrack it. Which one do you think will get the message to S0 as to how far it really is from the goal? Faster. Obviously the second one, because this way you actually know how far you are from the goal, at least in one trial, and then that can be brought back. But the disadvantage, a minor disadvantage is that you have to wait until the entire trial is over and you do all the backups at the same time. To some extent, if the heuristic is bad, if the original heuristic is bad, I would probably think, and this is just a guess right now, I'd probably think that waiting until the end and coming back is a better idea. If on the other hand, heuristic is pretty informed to begin with, then there isn't going to be that much of a difference which way you do, and the second way of doing, you need to remember more things. You have to keep your entire trace in memory for a while. You see what I'm saying? Okay, so that's there are multiple variations on the main idea, and you can almost guess some of them yourself if you figure out that what this guy is trying to do is do the value iteration piece by piece by piece. It's sort of, think of this as it's doing the value iteration function. It's trying to do value iteration by sort of a vague raster scanning. Okay, it's looking at particular paths on which it's doing updates. And this is a prioritized updating, except the priorities are determined by the specific traits you followed. Now the interesting question is, why is this better than value iteration? Why is this supposed to be better than normal value iteration? So RTDP was said to be better. Now, when originally RTDP came out, it was by Bartow and Sachinder Singh many years back, and that was for reinforcement learning. And notice that for reinforcement learning, this is about the only thing you can do. You cannot do normal value iteration in reinforcement learning. Right? You actually don't know what an action does until you do it. Okay? And in fact, in reinforcement learning, there is no, this hand is not your hand. This is nature's hand. And it does the task, and all you get to see is what happened. Okay? And in fact, one of the things you will do is, okay, for this action, one time around, I got to S1. I mean, I did this action like 18 times in my lifetime, and 17 of the times, 16 of the times it went to this state, one time it went to this other state, one time it went to this other state. So, 16 by 18 probability, empirical probability that this will go here, and 1 over 18. There, you learned an action model during, reinforcement learning. Now, in the context of reinforcement learning, this is the only thing you can do. You actually have to do RTDP. Now, I have the model. Why am I doing RTDP? Why should it be better than simple value iteration? What does that mean? What does it mean to separate? That's correct, actually. It has a good anytime notion. But exactly what does that mean? Yes. So in particular, remember the example that I said last time, that suppose I know that I have a start state, first of all, right? And it turns out that my state space is actually split into three disconnected parts, okay? And my start state S0 is here. My start state S0 is here. Okay, now the interesting question is, value iteration will find the optimal value for all the state because it doesn't differentiate between who is start state, who is end state. But now I'm telling you what the start state is, and this guy actually can use that information because when he is done, how much ever time you run RTDP, it will only find the optimal values for this component. It won't find for this and this at all. It just won't touch them. In particular, actually, what you want to say is RTDP and basically anything which is based on this kind of simulation, it will only find the optimal values for the relevant state. Now, what are relevant states? I mean, in this particular case, you see this picture, you know that these are the only relevant states. Right? Because you are stuck in this, your goal is in this, your start is in this, why would these be relevant at all? Why? What's the point in knowing their value? However, relevance actually, so it's little more than that though. In this case, you can easily see that RTDP is useful. But suppose most of the time actually you do have essentially a connected component. Essentially a connected component. Okay? Now, in that case, what's the difference between RTDP and value function and value iteration? If it's a single component, then why is RTDP better? But they're all reachable. Remember, I put one component now. So that was the picture you had here, where nothing else in this was reachable. These are all probabilistically reachable. What actually matters? Think about this. I mean, MDPs are just great, great trove, treasure trove of metaphors for your real life. Okay? So the idea is, just because, so for example, you're walking on like on a trail in Grand Canyon, right? There are parts of the trail which are if you go to the very end of the trail and you sort of jump, you will fall and you'll die. Okay? Now the point is, must you find out what is the value of the state which is below the trail on the ridge? So if you do fall, then what is the value of that? Must you find that? It is reachable because bozos can go to the edge of the trail and jump off. Okay, but since when is reachability for bozos the definition of relevance? Relevance should be defined with respect to the optimal policy. It's a very involved point I'm making. It's a very interesting point I'm making. I mean, if you haven't thought about it, sorry for wasting your time. Relevance is not in terms of reachability, in terms of would the optimal policy touch this state. If it doesn't touch this state, I don't need to know what its value is. Okay? And there are many, many traps in the life. You know, you go through, for example, this is unfortunately how, for example, inner cities never get cleaned up. Right? I mean, I lived for a long time when I was in, grad school, I was in University of Maryland, and I would go from University of Maryland directly to the mall, National Mall, squeaky clean place here, squeaky clean place there, around the National Mall area, completely squeaky clean. As long as I don't, if I stick to my optimal policy and don't explore, right, I cannot get into trouble. Okay, and the same thing with Chicago, right? I mean, people are thinking that, it's a good enough city that you should have Olympics, but tell that to that poor guy who got, basically killed in the middle of the, inner city. The point is, for the most people, the optimal policy doesn't get them into those areas at all. Okay, and so if it doesn't, then its value doesn't change. Okay, yes, sir. No, this has nothing to do with limited contingency. No, it's like, imagine I give you, so you have to give me your reward function. So notice that some people's reward function involves actually jumping off of cliffs once in a while. Okay, if that is the case, then your optimal policy will also have the things little below the trails reachable to you for your optimal policy. But if you have totally negative reward for all of them and your positive reward is completely concentrated in Phantom Lodge, if you are like one of these nice guys, or to me Indian Tea Gardens in Grand Canyon, which is like for people who can't walk all the way to Phantom Lodge, right? Then essentially what you're going to do is you would just, your optimal policy will never require you to go into what is lying below the trail. Okay? Now, The interesting question is, I argue that RTDP ensures, in some sense, RTDP, if you start with a reasonably, you know, a good admissible heuristic, and you are doing the simulation based on the what are the likely outcomes, what are the likely outcomes, then in essence, RTDP is ensuring that you are guaranteed to have the correct value for all the relevant states. And you may have some values for some of the other states, but I won't spend too much time on them. And so there are two issues. One is, of course, the original heuristic, which is being, you know, which you are seeding it with. And the second is the fact that you're simulating using the model. And the model tells you what are actually probable, what are not probable. Okay, and then you will pick an action based on whether or not you like its outcomes. So you would have, starting in this particular place in the, you know, in a steep trail, you would have looked around and said, okay, yeah, this looks kind of bad, this looks kind of good, but let me see what is the best action. And the action of going forward winds up being the one which is best. In fact, in some of those cases, you know, you would go like close to the, you know, not the other edge, you know, this one. And this would not increase your, it increases the path cost. Because now, you know, you have a, you know, small trail, and then you're trying to stick as close to the edge. In fact, you know, many a time when you're going down Bright Angel Trail, the only place left is on the edge. And mules directly, happily walk on the edge, you know. And all the people are stuck to the cliff, because what are they doing? They're essentially picking the action that has the best value. And the actions which go straight might also have one likelihood of falling down, and so they're avoiding that. Okay? So in essence, what RTDP is doing for you is it's looking at the like not just reachable, but likely reachable space with respect to your eventual optimal policy. And that's a huge thing. The world is full of traps. Okay? But if you know the model, it doesn't matter to you that they are traps. You can avoid them. Yes, sir.
So it's kind of like we're exploiting the probability to only calculate Q values on the most likely path that we kind of
exactly
go through again and again, we get better and more refined.
Exactly. So the way it winds up doing its value functions, it will ensure that those states which the optimal policy will pass through will get to their optimal values faster. So this is a classic anytime algorithm. Right? If you run LRTDP, the question is how many of these trials are you going to do? You can do 10, you'll get a reasonable idea. You get 25, you get another reasonable idea. You get 39 or 3,000, you'll get a better and better idea. Now, one thing you have to remember is after you run the RTDP, whatever is the stored values on the state, that's your value function, with respect to which you compute a greedy policy and you stick to it. You don't learn anymore. There's no learning, basically. This is a pure, full model to begin with. So you decided to solve the model approximately, you know, you're given 5 minutes and you ran as many trials as you can in 5 minutes. In the value iteration, you know, it just, if you, especially the synchronous value iteration, it's not at all guaranteed that you will get the right states first. Okay? That's the point about RTDP. So it's a deceptively obvious idea, but you really have to think as to why is it useful, you know, for, it's useful for reinforcement learning, but why is it useful for acting? I mean, when you know the model. Okay? So anyway, this is basically the picture, the little algorithm for that, and it's very simple. It's exactly what I said, you know, is being shown, and essentially using the current utility, a current cost value, select the action with the highest expected value, you know, lowest expected cost at each state until you reach a terminating state, and then actually I wrote it, update the values along this path, which is the second idea. In fact, what the algorithm is doing is, as it is going forward, it's updating. Go forward, update. Go forward, update. In this, what I wrote was update when you reach the goal, but as actually this is not what is being done in the exam, in the algorithm. So I wasn't reading the algorithm myself. Okay, I think both ideas are good, but you know, this is the one that LRTDP is using actually.
You said update them by a greedy action. Were you actually picking the actions for
No, It's greedy action. Remember, there were three actions here.
Right.
You found out their values, Q values, based on the neighbor's value function. Remember, in picking these guys, you may actually depend on the current value of S0 too. Remember, some of these actions might get you back to the state. So in computing their Q value, you are actually depending on the current value of S0. And then you turn around, and then you, once you pick the best guy, the greedy best guy, you put it into this. Okay? Any other question? Okay. There was something that I wanted you to... Sheesh, I missed that. Okay. There was one thing that I forgot to put in, looks like. Yeah, there, this one. Okay, I want you to look at these two. Okay, so there is a trial which is simulating the greedy policy starting from start state. Greedy policy with respect to the current value, that's what it's simulating, which where the value itself is changing as you are simulating it. Okay, and the way it is changing is because you are simulating. Okay, now I want you to think of two extra ideas. Idea one is, I told you how you're doing the actions, picking, right? So in fact, this guy was saying you are picking, aren't you picking actions stochastically? Okay, I said, no, I'm not picking action stochastically. I'm deterministically picking the minimum Q value action. But suppose, why would I want to pick action stochastically? Would there be a reason to, so would there be a reason to pick action stochastically? So here is the interesting question. Suppose, so RTDP was originally, as I said, introduced for reinforcement learning. If you do RTDP, you really are a kid, you figured out a little bit of knowledge because you went to elementary school, right? And you are sticking to exploit that. And so you're always basically, when you do simulation, when you're doing only simulation, in fact, if you're doing reinforcement learning, you would basically be executing. But you're only going to execute those actions that you have seen previously, more or less. How will you learn new things? You need to learn new things. One of the problems is, in the reinforcement learning, there is this exploration versus exploitation trade-off. You are guaranteed to learn the optimal value function in an ergodic world. That means in a world where you won't die, you can always reach, all the states from all the states. You're guaranteed through reinforcement learning to find the optimal value function. But to get the guarantee, you need to ensure that once in a while you try random action. Because I could have given you an admissible heuristic which has biased you into certain direction, which is exactly what your parents have done to you, right? I mean, they have said, the best way to get, become, a successful person is to do these steps, step after step after step. And if we all did exactly that, then we'll be cookie cutter people, right? And the world would be actually, it's not just aesthetically less interesting. In fact, it would be much less interesting, because there won't be an Einstein, there won't be a Leonardo da Vinci, and there won't be lots and lots of people who would give up everything else and just focus on one thing, which is not a good way to live in terms of general happiness, but they have tried different actions. Okay? So the question is, how do you ensure the exploration? The way to do it in RTDP is, for reinforcement learning, instead of simulating, you will be executing. That much you agree. Furthermore, you also have to do exploration. What does exploration mean? With probability P, follow the greedy policy. So having computed what's the minimum action, with probability P, take that. With probability 1 minus P, pick any of the actions. Do you understand what I'm saying? That, as long as if your probability P is 0.001, then you don't get out of elementary school at all, because you're exploring around the elementary school neighborhood. Okay, you're not getting into the school ever. But at the same, that much is for sure. So that's what parents complain about, that you're not focused, you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. But at the same time, if P equal to 1, then also you're dead, because then you'll be just like your parents, which isn't particularly good. I mean, I'm a parent myself, I think, parents are good, but yeah, go ahead. That's kind of, but you should think about the connections. I mean, these are the kinds of things that I would like to see discussions on the blog. It's at a certain level they're connected, but they're not exactly one and the same. Okay? So here I think I know exactly what is the right thing to do with respect to what I know about the world. But the trick is, I don't know everything about the world. The only way I learn more about the world is to try or wait for somebody to open my brain and put new stuff in, which doesn't happen that often. Okay, in fact, going into a classroom so that I can try to put stuff into you is itself is an exploration action. I mean, there is no reward associated with it. I mean, I'm sorry to say, I mean, there is donuts today, but normally there's very little reward associated with it. Okay? And you're doing it even though it's not in your optimal, even though it's not on your greedy policy. Okay, so that's one thing that RTDP does, real RTDP with reinforcement learning does. The second idea that I want you to think of is, okay, so here I pick the action with probability, the best action with probability P, and then with 1 minus P, I pick any other action. And then in reinforcement learning, there is no tossing anyway. Nature gets to toss. Once the action is chosen, nature decides what happens. Now, I will talk about a different idea. This idea, essentially, is I'm doing actual simulation. I'm doing simulation, so it's not reinforcement learning. This is what we are doing today. Will there be any point in doing the following? What if I simulate the action effect with noise rather than exactly with respect to the probabilities? So that means when I got this action, right, it has three outcomes with known probabilities. So they said 0.9, 0.1, 0.1. I'm sorry, 0.8, 0.1, 0.1. Okay? So I would toss a coin, a three-headed coin, which comes, you know, heads 80% and tails 1, you know, 10%, tails 2, 10%. That's actual simulation. What if I added some noise to these probabilities? Would there be any point in adding noise to the probability? If you add the noise, essentially what is likely to happen is these less likely outcomes might wind up happening more often. Okay? That's what a noise is going to do, because it's going to, you know, screw around with the probabilities. Why would I want to do that? What? So basically, by doing this, RTDP by itself is too greedy. It will only focus on the states that are most likely to happen. Okay, so if you are going to have 10, this is something that happens in FFHOP too, which I'm not yet getting to. But if you're going to have a low probability outcome, when you toss the coin only 10 times, it'll happen 0 times in the 10 times. So it's easy to believe that it will never happen, so it will never get updated. And if you started with a really bad admissible heuristic, value zero heuristic, then these less likely but potentially life-threatening states, if you do get into them, you need to know what to do. This Captain Sullenberger kind of an idea, right? Where, you know, nobody ever tells you to figure out what to do when you take off from, LaGuardia and both your engines get undone by a flock of geese. Mostly you expect that we will run out of peanuts, you know, while we are flying. But this guy had figured out somehow at some point of time. And so, you know, he was able to actually nicely bring it down on Hudson. So the question is, in his case, the value function has converged. And so he knew the optimal value even for very unlikely states. Most normal pilots will know optimal values for all the likely states. And then they'll say, you know, we didn't expect both engines to go, so, you know, we're dead. And we wouldn't be too unhappy with them either. That's why, you know, to make up for the asymmetry, we are extremely happy with this guy. Apparently, he can't walk without people stopping him and taking his picture, right? Because he's done something which most of us won't do, which is we'll only know the optimal value function for the likely state. And to increase the convergence, what he had to have done is, if you think of him sitting at his home doing RTDP, right, to figure out what are all the contingencies for which he has to, you know the optimal values, if he just did, you know, you could do it in two different ways. One is he did more of these trials than you did. You did 10 trials and you went home, and so you became Southwest pilot or America West pilot, okay? And then that guy did 10,000 trials and then he became, you know, he's not actually an America West pilot. It turns out he's from US Airways, you know, and then became part of America West, okay? So that's what, one way he actually got that better value function. The other is, you both are given the same number of samples, you use them dumb way and he used them the smart way. When was the last time we thought about using samples in a smart way? Those of you who took 471. Every sampling based algorithm, the coin of the realm is the number of samples. And remember the likelihood weighting in BayesNet thing? Most samples would wind up not agreeing with the evidence, if in fact evidence is downstream. So you would go through the entire work of generating a sample. You might say, how hard is it? Just you're tossing a bunch of coins. But if you're doing 10 billion samples, each sample taking an extra few milliseconds is going to kill you. And you will generate this entire sample and find, oops, it's not agreeing with my evidence, throw it out. And likelihood weighting basically says, well, I will not even sample at the evidence. I will make the evidence be what it's supposed to be, and then make the sample count for a fractional value. Instead of one sample, it will be 0.001 sample. 0.001 beats the heck out of zero. Okay? This is what you wind up doing, in essence, if you add noise in a smart way, for example. In some sense, you will wind up looking at samples that may not have been reachable in a limited number of sample space. I mean, if you only are considering 100, this one is a 0.001 probability, you would never actually look at it. By adding noise, once in a while you look at it.
Okay, so you're saying that thousands and thousands of
samples, you just add some
noise.
Yeah, of course, if you know exactly what noise to add, then it's not noise, right? That's called jamming. No, but when you're doing the coin tossing, now the probabilities are being changed because you're adding noise. All I am saying is the less likely ones are being given a chance, species being given a chance. And so then they can happen. Yes, sir?
It seems like it'd be more effective than adding noise, like say every 15th, you add a mutation, like every 15th time you make a choice, you just choose randomly ignoring the probabilities.
That's one way or two.
Okay.
There's like, you know, basically, just as RTDP is a trial, my entire lecture is one trial. Okay, there's other ideas all around the neighborhood.
Because when you talk about adding noise, all you're doing is really, like, it seems ideally the best noise you could add would just be smoothing it out, you know, so every choice is even.
No, all I'm saying is that it's not that people would add noise to improve an algorithm normally, but sometimes adding noise will have theoretical guarantees. Right, and it just so happens in this case that if you add noise, it could have slightly faster convergence. This is a big deal because if you read the paper on RTDP, there is actually a footnote where they point out that people have tried adding noise to deal with this convergence problem. Instead, we want to be smarter, and their smarter idea is essentially labeling. Is labeling. Okay, which is why it's called labeled RTDP. And now I finally get to that. So basic idea is to do the labeling. So the idea is their way of doing these things is that I will always still simulate with respect to the existing given probabilities, but I just want my the amount of time I spend in sampling to be less. And one way I can do that is to say some states, I already know their values. So if I get to that state, I don't want to go forward on them. So if I said 10,000 samples, each trace of length 100 is your time bound, then you could make it 20,000 samples, which each trace being only 50 length average. Right? The amount of time would be the same because the time that you're spending is in the backups. And the tossings. So if you don't have to go all the way to the goal, and if you say, this much, I know this guy is already solved. So it's as good as, even though this is not a terminal state in the sense of terminal state, this guy's value is not going to change. And if it's not going to change, there's no point in going forward on it. In the beginning, only states whose values are known not to change are the goal states. Right? Now, basically what you want to do is you want to keep track of other states which are also not going to change based on the fact that goal is already solved. So there is a solved labeling. Okay, a label saying for each state you say solved. Okay, and if it is yes, that means this state doesn't have to be looked at again. As far as you're concerned, you have solved this problem, that particular state. If you ever reach that state, you don't have to go forward. And then RTDP is doing its thing, and the solved labeling is being done parallelly, and it keeps making more and more things solved. And as soon as the start state ever gets a solved label, you no longer want to do anything more. And that's exactly, that's another way of understanding what happens in the Grand Canyon Trail thing. You know, there may be many, many states for which you don't know the optimal value function, but the start state already has solved labels. So why do you want to waste your time? Yes, sir. Not. That's a good point. So that's actually the question you have to ask yourself. How can you be solved without the guys around you not being solved? And that's exactly the reason, and that's a very good question. This is important. Solved labeling, I said this in the beginning of the class, and now you should understand this. Solved labeling wouldn't work for normal value iteration, which is initialized with any value function whatsoever. However, if you initialize cost with an admissible heuristic, then you can see that Bellman update will only increase the cost. It will never reduce it. It will monotonically increase. So you start with admissible, Bellman update only makes it bigger and bigger and bigger. Right? So now what happens is, I have a situation here. I know G is done. Okay? And this is the best action currently with respect to G. That's kind of taking me to G, and its value is being computed that way. Now, G is solved already, and this guy has three more states that it is connected to through its action. None of them are solved. But their values are such that the Q values you are getting to those other actions are already higher than the Q value you are getting for this. Tell me, please, one of you, what idea does this remind you of? This is a classic search idea that A star search does. What? Just say that so that I'll be happy today.
A star does this.
It does that, but there's a name for this. One more part.
Branch and
bar. Exactly. You're doing branch and bar. And remember your A star search lecture. Branch and bound makes sense only under certain conditions. If a partial path can only increase in cost, and a current complete path is already better than all the partial paths, then there is no point in doing those partial paths. Solved labeling is a branch and bound over the value function, over the cost function. And branch and bound is a great idea. You won't give names to ideas that are not great, right? I mean, if it is too obvious, then you won't give it a name. It's a great idea because it does cut the search. And this is a great idea again because it's doing basically branch and bound in the context of, you know, value function. Okay, and so that's basically, of course, I mean, this is the minimum. You should read the rest of the paper to understand exactly how to propagate the solved labeling. This gives you the basic, you know, most significant bits of the idea. Why does it even make sense? And how can I increase the number of solved ones? So one of the interesting things that would happen is sometimes two states together will have to be said to be solved. Neither one of them is solved by itself. But, you know, the algorithm has to realize that both of these are solved, in which case nothing will change. And that's one of the things that they do in the longer labeling algorithm. But the whole point of the labeling, really, back point of, so you're basically backpropagating the solved label. Okay? Forward simulate, backpropagate the solved label. Previously, remember I also said backpropagate the value. My second idea was go hit the goal and backpropagate the value. And I still think that would have been a reasonable thing to do too. These guys are essentially doing one step backup and then also a backpropagate of the solved labeling. It's less important why to understand this specific idea. It's way more important to understand why such an idea is needed. It's needed because the other guy is doing greedy simulation. And so it will take longer time to converge. Remember the Sullenberger example. Okay? you can live through your entire pilot's life without ever having encountered a situation where both your engines are hit by geese. And so you will die a good pilot, right? But he figured out what to do, essentially, you know, when in fact right on the skyscrapers of New York, your two engines go out. And that is a very unlikely state. Knowing the optimal value there is the only way you will find out what the optimal action to do. So convergence, it looks like, if you read this LRTDP paper, it looks like they're just whining. You know most of the likely states, you know what to do. Why are you whining that you are taking longer time to converge the entire space? All the likely states, you converge very fast. Remember Sullenberger. Okay, and if you want to be him, then you need to do this. If you say, I don't need it, then that's fine too. Okay, so that's basically the issue. The unlikely states, you still need to know what their optimal value is so that you'll know what the optimal action is. Okay? So that's LRTDP. Okay? Let me see if there's anything else. Stop trials when they reach any solved state. This is basically what I said. Okay, so you don't have to go all the way to goal. Any solved state, you stop the trial and restart all over again from the start state. So it has all these properties, it is admissible, it's heuristic guided because you can start with a good heuristic to initialize, and if it's not admissible then you can't do LRTDP. Label propagation cannot be done if the heuristic is not admissible because this argument won't hold. Branch and bound can't be done. Remember, the branch and bound for A star search works only because of admissible heuristic. If you have a partial path and to it you add an estimate of the remaining path cost, and if you know that the added estimate is guaranteed to be lower than the real value, and if this sum itself is higher than a complete path, then it clearly is the case that bird in your hand is worth two in the bush, and then you kill the partial path. Okay, it's completely connected. It's exactly the same ideas, you know, in the deeper point. Okay, so it has any time. And then if you do labeling, it also increases the convergence on the unlikely state. That's the important point, okay? So that's, now what I want to talk about is, yes sir? Yes. The way of thinking about LRTDP is all thinking. It's not doing any actions yet. It's first trying to figure out the best value function. Okay? It wants to compute the optimal value function. By amount of time given, it tries to do as many trials as it can and figures out what is the current values. And at that point of time, now you start executing this policy. When you execute, you essentially not only pick the greedy best action, you actually do it in the world. You don't toss a coin. You do it in the world, which is very different. When you do it in the world, then, you know, if in fact the bad thing happens and you are, you know, dead, you're dead. Okay. Whereas when you're thinking, it's just a possibility. No, the entire LRTDP procedure, including the labeling,
yeah,
it's all done before execution. That's the best way to think about it. You can think of it as it's all being done before execution. You have a value function now, then you start, the best value function you have, then you start executing.
When do you do that?
No, that's basically all it's doing is they are not in the final version that I looked at in the LRTDP. I'm just reducing. I'm not being smart about which samples to look at. Instead, I'm just saying, given the same amount of time, I look at more samples by doing the solve propagation. So instead of likelihood weighting, you could do much faster, you know, more number of, if you can somehow do more samples in the given amount of time, then that's just as good as likelihood weighting. Okay, and the solved labeling essentially is increasing your ability to try more trials, because many of the trials will end 50 or 25 length instead of going all the way to 100 or 150 where the goal states are. And furthermore, in fact, as soon as the start state becomes solved, then you're done. Okay? Now, the other thing that we want to talk about is the the FF-HOP. And the interesting idea there, in fact, one of the things you want to do is combine both these ideas and make connections between both of them. And FF-HOP, as I said, LRTDP is best understood as you compute the entire policy and start using it. And in fact, in the probabilistic planning competition, there was a planner based on LRTDP, and that it worked exactly that way. It would compute the best value function it can in the given amount of time and decide what's the action to do with respect to that policy and do it. And then you'll get more, and then it'll say what is the state, and it'll tell you what is the action to do. So it'll use the 30 minutes that it's given, it'll use 29 minutes to compute the best policy and 1 minute to execute it. FF-HOP, on the other hand, uses its 30 minutes in a very different way. It does one or two minutes of thinking, comes up with the best action to do from current point, sends it out, and the simulator says, now you are in this state. Then it'll take 2 more minutes to figure out what's the best action from there. So it's actually doing online search. It's doing one action, find out what happens, then do the next action. So in reality, if you give a non-ergodic domain, that means domains where you can, you know, put yourself into states from which you can't come out, then LRTDP is less likely to die than FF-HOP. Because online search can be always iffy. You know, what looks good, you know, in one step look ahead may be pretty bad. Okay, and so what is actually interesting, and in fact, in some sense, the story of FF-HOP is that the original ideas that people were, I don't know whether I mentioned the whole entire ICAP, the probabilistic planning competition history, but the guys who tried FF-REPLAN tried it as a straw man idea. They had much more interesting ideas. LRTDP is one of them. Somebody was trying this. They had an approximate policy rollout idea, which is sort of like FF-HOP. And they just to be sure, they tried the dumbest idea, which is basically ignore all the probabilities, take the most likely outcome of each action, then it becomes a deterministic problem, solve the plan, take the first action and say, that's the action I'm going to do. And then let the world tell you what's the state you actually gotten into. And then again do the determinization, completely determinize it by actually picking the most likely outcome. And then it becomes a deterministic planning problem. Use FF to solve it. Take the first action among the plan from that state onwards, do it again. This was called FF-REPLAN. In essence, what it's doing is it computes the entire plan, but it never really matters. You know, from the state F0, it computed a 5, let's say 10 action plan. It could care less about what are the actions 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, etc. What it really wants is the first action. It does it. And when the new state comes, in the original FF-REPLAN, it just ignores the other 9 actions of the previous plan. It tries to do one more plan now and takes the first action. It's like, you know, Muffin Tops episode in Seinfeld, for those of you who remember it. So you do the whole thing just to get the first action, okay? And you keep doing this multiple times. Okay, now the interesting question is, unfortunately, the first year FF-REPLAN won the competition. Now it's a very good question as to whether this means what? What does this mean? Does this mean that the smart ideas are actually dumb in the sense they're wasting time? Does this mean that the exam questions are dumb? Remember, I can set an exam such that smart people wind up doing worse and dumb people wind up doing better, where smart and dumb are actually being defined, you know, not by exam, but in some absolute sense. And so is this the benchmarks problem? Is this the problem of the, you know, algorithms themselves, etc.? So then the second time when the probabilistic planning competition was held, they tried to generate benchmarks which will essentially have some dead states. Original time, they didn't have that many dead states. So they had this one idea, was this thing called exploding blocks world benchmark, which you know you can read in the slides that I put there on IPC. What it does is it's basically a normal blocks world, except the first time you put a block down on the table, right? That block essentially, I mean, the first time you put a block on another block, I guess, that block just explodes. That means it disappeared. So you such a, you have a and you want to put B on top of it so that you get on BA, but you right away put B on top of A, B disappears. It exploded. So what you need to do is you need to take a sacrificial block, like C, put it on A, and let it die, and then, you know, A itself apparently remains normal, you know, in this crazy domain. And then you then put B on top of this. So it's like bomb sniffing dogs, you know, right? So that's basically what is supposed to be done, and clearly FF3 plan is like is supposed to die there. Okay, and they made bunch of these kinds of domains and where FF3 plan was supposed to die, and they also made bunch of domains where there are, remember what FF3 plan is doing is sort of the same problem that LRT, the same problem that RTDP had, except on steroids. Right, I said the problem with RTDP is the more likely ones keep happening most of the time, the less likely ones now, you know, happen much less of the time. But sometimes the much less likely ones also you need to know what to do then. Right? Now, FF3 plan essentially doesn't even, you know, at least RTDP actually has a coin and it's tossing it. FF3 plan says before I start itself, I will kill the action such that it only has one outcome, which is the most likely outcome. So it will never, ever, ever, ever see anything other than the most likely outcome. Which means if the way, if there is an actual way of going from the start state to start to the goal state, but it involves using less likely outcomes of some of the actions, FF3 plan will say the problem is unsolvable. Right? So that's the second problem with FF3 plan. So what so then the second idea for FF3 plan was this idea called all outcome determinization. So in the first idea, basically, we had this scenario where if you had action A1, which gives P with probability 0.7, Q with probability 0.2, R with probability 0.1, in the first idea, A just gives P. And it's a deterministic problem. Okay? In the second idea, in essence, what you would say, well, A gives all of them. A1 gives P, A1 gives Q, A1 gives R. All of them are likely. All of them are, you know, since basically they, you can play God here and say, yes, there is uncertainty, but I will make sure that the uncertainty works in my favor. I will know what I need and I will make it happen. So this one action here essentially becomes three actions in the all outcome determinization, what they call all outcome determinization. The advantage in all outcome determinization is what? If there is no, this I would argue is like planning graph. If there is no way of reaching the goal state in all outcome determinization, you know for sure there is no path. Right? I mean, this is the maximum help you can expect from the nature. You know, here is a stochastic action and you are going to have control as to which one will happen. There's no more I can do for you. And if you still can't solve your problem, then the problem is not solvable. Right? Okay? So, what, now of course, if you can solve it, so then basically by doing this, they were able to take care of the problems which in which the less likely outcomes have to be used to get to the goal. Okay, but then of course, that, you know, you might wind up making, in fact, there may be multiple plans for the same goal, one which uses less likely outcome and in three steps will reach the goal, and one which uses more likely outcomes and it takes 28 steps to reach the goal. All outcome one would be kind of delusional and think it can do the goal in three steps and it will use the wrong action in the beginning. Do you understand what I'm saying? Okay, so there is a problem there too. So there is an all outcome problem, there is normal FF3 plan problem. And none of this would have been an issue if they want winning competition. Right? This is supposed to be a dumb idea, but it's winning competition. And what FF Hopf was essentially saying, And I'll take 5 more minutes and then we'll stop, and then whatever else is left, we'll talk next time. What FFHOP is doing essentially, and these slides are actually bad anyway. What FFHOP is doing is, let me draw my own picture here. You can say that ultimately, the way currently FF replan as well as FF all outcomes replan is doing is, you are starting it at zero. You are making one single planning problem, calling FF to solve it, take the first action. The way you make that one single planning problem changed in the two cases. First one just uses most likely, second one uses all outcomes as if they are separate actions. Okay, and what the while both of these are obviously crazy ideas, a better idea could be start from S0. Okay, I have these actions. A1 gives P with 0.7, Q with 0.3. A2 gives R with 0.6, M with 0.4. A3 gives J with 0.6, and N with 0.1, and M with 0.3. Okay, these are the three actions I have. That's my domain. I will argue that what you did in the FF replan was to determinize each of the actions in a pretty brutal way. You always pick the most likely outcome for each action. Suppose instead I have my coin. I go to each of these actions and toss the coin. And if it comes Q, then in the current determinization, A1 is going to have Q as the only outcome. Okay? And then similarly, I toss here, I toss here, I get three deterministic actions whose outcomes are dependent on the coin toss. These three deterministic actions will determine, will specify a deterministic planning problem. If you solve that planning problem and take the first action in that, that is what would have happened if that determinization is what happens for you. Now let's do one more determinization, do 10 of them, let's say. Okay, a dumb idea is, if A1 winds up showing up as the first action in 7 of the 10, that means it's a pretty good action to do in the first case. That's basically what FFHOP is doing, except rather than do it that way, it splits it into slightly different way. So you do S0 and you consider doing action A1, action A2, action A3. Let's say those are the three actions that you can do from the S0. Now you try to compute the Q values, estimate the Q values for each of these actions. To estimate the Q values of each of these actions, in essence, you basically, there are a bunch of states that you're coming to when you do these actions. Some of them can come from multiple actions. For each of these states, starting from this state, you do a determinization and solve the problem, count the number of actions in that solution, for example, and you can say that's the cost in that determinization. Do it once again, count the length, and you do, you know, 10 of these and take the average length. That would be the average cost of this state. And then that the second one will be average cost of this state and so on. So I have average cost for multiple of these states. Okay? And then now I can actually compute the Q values for A1 because I know the values of these guys. And using the Bellman update, I can actually figure out what is the best Q value action and do that. And basically what FFHOP says is the more these determinations you do, the better your value function accuracy. Okay, I will actually stop here. There are a couple of questions that you might have. For example, I hope you understand the specific thing that you should understand about FFHOP. And if you don't, make sure you ask me next class. Forget all this. Well, these are all supposedly, you know, actual. Oh, wait. I just want you to show you one slide, which is also in the paper, but you should understand that. Wow, that slide disappeared. Basically, this, let me see if it has been hidden by mistake. Ah, I don't know, it disappeared. Essentially, there is that's the second section which compares the value function as computed by this determinization-based approach and the optimal value function, and shows that the value function you compute this way, you are computing estimates of the values of these guys. What you really need is the optimal values for these guys. What it asks you to show, what basically it shows is the value function you compute by determinization is going to be an upper bound. I mean, the cost is going to be an upper bound. I'm sorry, value is the upper bound on the real value. Okay, because of which hindsight optimization can be too optimistic sometimes. Okay, you should understand that, you know, that's quite formal. It makes sense, you know, just from the Bellman update equation. So make sure that you understand that. Okay. So I'll stop here, and next class the main topic will be reinforcement learning. If you have any questions on FFHOP, and in particular if you have questions on how to combine FFHOP with LRTDP, that would be a good discussion to have next class. Stop. Thank you.